At Alma, we know the connection between you and your therapist matters. But if you're already feeling stressed and burnt out, the idea of trying to find a therapist you really connect with can be overwhelming. That's why Alma's focused on helping you find the right therapist for you. When you browse their online directory, you can filter by the qualities that are most important to you. Then, book free 15-minute consultations with any therapist you're interested in seeing. And because 95% of therapists at Alma accept insurance, you can find care that's affordable too. You want to talk to someone, but not just anyone. Alma is there to help you find the right fit. Visit helloalma.com/therapy30 to schedule a free consultation today. That's helloalma.com/therapy30.
Talk is Jericho.
Hi, we're very do-it-yourself here at the World Drive-In Jamboree. Don't you agree?
We're punk rock, man.
We are very punk rock, doing this in a punk rock style. So tonight we're going to be having the Sleepaway Camp marathon watch along, which is great.
Woo!
And my favorite of the series, and possibly my favorite horror movie of all time, is Sleepaway Camp 2. So we have Amy and Kendall are here. They're part of the original cast. Of Sleepaway 2, it was Demi and which one of the Schrote sisters?
Jody,
exactly, known as the Shit Sisters. You can sit down. The sun's a little bit hot. If it gets a little bit crazy, you can walk around and
you can
don't
to
worry
my
about
cool
that.
Section over here.
You see, you guys have fans. Yeah, we're gonna have you talking to that one right there. So, can we agree out there that Sleepaway Camp 2 is a masterpiece of 80s horror?
Yes, we can.
Yes. So I found this movie back when I mentioned earlier on the Awesome Pod.
Woo!
We used to have a club. It was called the Cheap Ass Club. And what the Cheap Ass Club did was watch cheap ass horror movies. And we would go rent them at the local Jumbo Video. We didn't pronounce the J. It was the Winnipeg thing. So it was Jumbo Video. And you would go and look at the box. And then you would pitch it to your friends. Like, this is the one we should watch. For these reasons. Now, Sleepaway Camp 2, Unhappy Campers, has this girl, and she's standing on the front cover, and she's got like a Freddy.
Yes, dude.
Remember
that's
this?
What made me discover it too, that cover
right.
box. It's
the cover
iconic.
Box, yeah.
It's like, I have to watch this.
Yeah, it was a picture of she's got a Freddy glove and a Jason mask. And
right,
I think,
and
like
I think she's got her little booty shorts, right? It's like a
right,
really cute,
like a
it's like, I gotta watch this.
So you look at this thing and go like, what is this? Like, this looks okay. And then you watch it and realize just how amazing it is. So
exactly.
I want to ask you guys, and Darcy, you love Sleepaway as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, it's my top 10 too. Like
top
we,
10 for
we
you.
Love this movie.
Yeah, we love
seriously.
It. Seriously,
you guys are icons to us. I'm not even kidding.
Iconic. So let me ask this. So Kendall, let's start with you. It's been 35 odd years since this movie came out. Does it make you laugh when some dummy like me says it's one of the greatest movies of all time? This
Initially,
movie.
It surprised me. It really, really surprised me. I love it. I love it when you do something you don't anticipate how it will be received, the longevity of it. And I don't laugh. I'm humbled by it.
You're humbled by it, right?
Yes.
How about you, Amy?
No, I laugh my ass off. But no, I'm just kidding. I'm actually pretty stunned about it because it's like she was saying, you do something and you don't realize what kind of impact it's going to have later. And to understand now the following that we have is awesome.
Yeah, you can cuss. Woo!
So, Darcy, how did you discover Unhappy Campers?
Well, I think I just told you.
What, did you just buy it from the box?
Yes, from the box. I was like, I remember seeing it when I was too little and my parents wouldn't let me get it. So finally, when I was old enough to rent on my own, I'm like, going back to that and was shocked by how much it lived up to the cover box. Like, this is as good as advertised. And so I've just watched it. I've probably seen it 150 times, maybe.
Yeah.
And I never get tired of it. Like, he watched it the other night to prepare. And I was like,
yeah.
No, I want to be watching it again right now.
It's not even to prepare. Like, I've seen it at least 150 times as well. Like, I watch it usually two or three times a year. Like, it's that
yeah,
type
totally.
Of a movie. It's the type of movie that if I'm like, I want to watch something or just have something in the background, I'll put on Sleepaway Camp 2. You know?
That blows my mind.
Why is that?
When a celebrity thinks that you're mind-blowing and the best of all time. You know, that's pretty cool.
The thing is, when I discovered it, I was not a celebrity, not even close, just a kid who thought this movie would be something interesting, you know, and watching it. And the thing I like about it, like, so Sleepaway Camp, the original, there's a certain tone to it. I think it's much darker than 2. And 2 is a little
way
bit...
way more serious, for
way
sure.
more serious, right? And 2 is a little bit more... shall I say 80s? Does that make sense?
It's definitely 80s, and it has a little bit of that comedy to make it more lighthearted, but not enough to turn it off, because we are not big horror comedy fans. I take it serious, like, as much as silly as that might sound. To me, it's serious with a bit of humor, you know? Camp.
Yeah, campy, but they play it straight. It's not like there's, like, you know, there's a Return of the Living Dead, where there's, like, jokes being cracked, and it's, like, it's just more of a lighthearted type of a film. So how did you guys get involved with this? You can start, Kendall. Do you remember how you got the gig, and what did you hear about this movie, and kind of how did it all come to be?
I really didn't know about... the direction of the movie, but an agent submitted me. I live in Atlanta. I was living in Atlanta then. I went to the audition. They wanted a slightly humorous, edgy young lady, and I got the gig.
So you auditioned for it?
I definitely auditioned for it, yes.
That's
yes.
amazing. This was the hot movie on the block, the big sequel.
Right, were you so excited? Really?
I
nailed it.
I was. I was blown away. Yes. 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 Yes.
How about you, Amy? Do you remember how you got the gig?
Yeah. I mean, I auditioned also. I was an Atlanta actor as a young teenager, but originally I had auditioned and got the part for the other sister, but my parents didn't want me to do that part, so they put me in the other sister role and brought Carol in. Carol was already on the production behind the scenes, and so they asked her to do the sister that gets the make-out scene and all that.
Ah, so that's what your parents didn't want you making out on camera.
Right, right.
Right, right. So you played the other shit sister.
Yes, yes.
Someone asked me, who you having on? I said, I got one of the shit sisters. Like, oh, that's amazing. Yes. Which we find out in the movie, they're called the Shoat.
Shoat.
The Shoat
yes.
sisters. Right, yes. exactly. So this movie filmed in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And so kind of tell us a little bit, like, how long did it take? And give us some of the stories about making this film as far as... did you live there in the camp? Was it an actual camp? Were you?
It was a camp that was no longer active, so it was a little creepy in and of itself because it hadn't been used in quite some time. No, we stayed nearby. We didn't stay at the camp.
What a dumb question. I mean, you guys didn't stay in the camp? Like, what?
No,
I thought you'd be living there.
I've been on productions where they would absolutely have you living there. So
that's a trauma
They
trick.
Hooked you up.
That's a Lloyd Kaufman.
That
you'd
is
be
very
living
much
in the actual
And
cabins,
a last
right?
drive-in thing.
Yeah, well, good call, yeah.
And it was done in October, so at night it was a little cool walking around in those shorts. My fondest memory was going to pick up my bag, and there was a snake curled next to my bag.
Wow.
And I'm
wow.
one of those people that don't like snakes. So I tried not to scream because they were filming right nearby, and I just backed up and left my bag there.
That was pretty considerate of you not to bust the take because you had a snake on your bag. That's a sign of a trooper. There's a true professional here.
Professional.
A true professional. You're a master thespian.
Yeah.
What do you remember, Amy, about kind of the whole camp and going there?
I think my biggest memory is the scene where we're all in the cafeteria for breakfast and we sing the song. But we all had this, like, plaster-like oatmeal to eat.
Yeah.
And just playing with it. I don't think I ever ate it, and I don't think anybody was eating it. It was just, but it was like, oh.
So thick, right?
What the
we
hell
stirred
is this?
It a lot.
But that's true summer camp food, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? Exactly, yeah. Let's talk about the movie itself, and Darcy and I love this movie. What are some of your favorite moments from the film, just thinking about it?
I don't know. I just love the movie.
Well, we're going to go through some of the stuff. But tell me about Allie, the girl who played Allie. Did you get along with her? She's one of my favorites in the movie.
Yeah, she was not like her character.
Valerie Hartman.
Yeah, she was not like her character. She was really cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, we all got along. Actually, we all got along. Well, not sounding corny, but that's true. We all did get along. And I got to give one of those famous lines to her about the long black hair.
And remember the line?
You remember?
Yes.
Say it.
I'm staring at that long black hair on your tit or something like that.
Awesome.
Well, yeah, you saw a lot of her boobs in that movie. She was one of the purveyors of boobness.
She was the token set of tits.
There's a couple
other
people.
Nice girls don't have to show it off.
She also has one of the best deaths in cinematic history, of course, Allie.
Yes. Yeah.
When she, if you guys seen this, when she gets shoved down the outhouse, with
the leeches and shit. No.
Yeah, with a giant stick. And one thing I love about this movie, it happens quite a few times, is there's this like this incessant buzzing of flies. If you see the movie, all you hear is like. So one of the scenes where it has that is in the outhouse. So she gets shoved down the outhouse with a stick, and she comes up from the outhouse covered in leeches, which asks the question.
Iconic.
But do leeches live in human waste? I've never heard that before in science class. Yeah.
Shut up. I've never thought about that.
Why were there leeches? It's an outhouse. There's pee and poop in there. Why is there leeches just living in it?
Can someone Google that and tell if leeches live in shit?
Can leeches live in toxic
suspension
waste?
Suspension
of disbelief. Yeah, right.
I see people on it.
I think they live in stagnant water.
Ah,
well, there you go, right?
So there you go.
I don't know about the other part of it.
Yeah, we're learning science shit.
You guys remember this, right? She comes up and she's got leeches all over her face, which is just the greatest scene ever. And then later on, of course, in the reveal with all the bodies, you see her and she now has a green face with the leeches still stuck on her. So the leeches were sacrificed as well, right?
Very rarely.
Hold on. We have Mr. Science come up here and let's give us, what does it say? I want you to read what it says.
Give us a report on science.
These guys got a little setup over here. There's a
protected from the heat over there.
We have our table. Fact checker.
So read what you, first of all, what did you Google?
Fact checker.
Give him the mic, Chris.
Do leeches live in human waste? And what does it say?
It says very rare in colons. But not in just waste.
It's oh my
God. Oh. However, does her still water idea, that or stagnant water, that would make sense,
would you say
sense,
very
right?
rare in what?
Live inside of you in a rectal infestation.
Jeez Louise.
Whoa.
There's our movie, our idea for the next movie, the rectal infestation of leeches.
No, thank you.
All right, so we have shown that it is possible for leeches to have been living in there. So Allie really could have been besieged
by
the leeches there for sure. Oh, let's talk about some of the co-stars in the movie, because like you guys showed up. Was this your first movie or one of your first movies?
It was one of my first principal movies. Yeah.
How about you, Amy?
I had actually done a couple of other productions, but nobody would
right.
know them.
So this movie has some names, shall we say. Obviously, the first one is Angela, is played by Pamela Springsteen, who is the sister of Bruce Springsteen, which is amazing to me. And people still like, are you serious? It really was the boss's sister, right?
Yep.
Tell us about Pamela, what she was like to work with. And
she was very quiet, but she was very sweet. You know, like I didn't have a lot of time to work with her. So, you know, I don't have anything bad to say about her. She was very, very nice to work with.
Oh, no, we want some tea. Make something up.
I mean, she was very
Such
quiet.
Such a diva.
Yeah, she was quiet, but she was down to earth. I mean, you wouldn't have known who she was unless someone told you.
Was there ever any on-set visits from the boss coming to check out little sister?
No.
I think that would be awesome if Bruce Springsteen showed up at one point and, like, played the happy camper
scene.
Theme or something, right? For the leash scene.
Had to see that toilet scene.
I'm a happy camper.
Yeah, he should have
in the sky.
He should have played the guitar during this.
The guitar nerd. But that's the thing, though. So you have a Pamela Springsteen, and then another Hollywood royalty family. You have Renee Estevez, sister of one Emilio, Charlie Sheen, and daughter of Martin Sheen.
Yep.
Which is another just the most random of castings there. talk about Recollections of Renee.
She was awesome. She was really friendly, really just, you know, like you felt like she was your best friend as soon as you met her.
Right.
She was really cool.
All right. All right. Kendall?
Yeah. Same. Same. She was a lot more outgoing than Pam, but she, again, was another down-to-earth, just fun. We were just having fun. No one was putting on airs or I'm
you guys are just
so-and-so
kids
so.
Here.
Yeah, we
out.
Were young. Yeah. Just,
did you guys party at all on set or anything like that? Have any days off on set where you guys went and hung out?
The only real party we had was when we had our cast party at the end, and we had it at the camp. And
yeah.
Everybody stayed the night, and it was a night.
Wackiness ensued. Yeah. When's the last time you've seen the movie?
Maybe about a year or so ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
How about you?
Are you watching it tonight with us?
I think we will stick around.
Yay!
Hang out.
Yeah.
We'll
see it on the big,
yeah.
big screen.
I don't think we ever saw it on the big screen. Oh
I doubt God, it ever had a theatrical release. I don't think
it did.
Mm-hmm. Went
straight
to
video.
Yeah.
Right.
Straight to Blockbuster.
Straight to Yumbo Video.
Yeah.
There was a lot of experienced actors on the two, like the guy who played TC, I remember was on Eight Is Enough.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Brian Clark, I think his name was.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then the most random of casting was Walter Gotell as Uncle John.
Yeah. Yep.
He was like in famous war movies, like The Bridge to the River Kwai type of movies and those types of things.
Yep.
Did you learn from such Hollywood luminaries as Brian Patrick Clark and Walter Gotell?
Again, very nice people. I know we keep saying that, but it was true. Everybody was super, super cool. And my sister and I got knocked off pretty early. So
you did, right.
We didn't have a whole lot of time to get to know people very well. But
let's talk about that. So the sister, the poor shit sisters are basically burned alive.
And hence my pants.
Ah.
I bought
the
brilliant.
Pants.
There you go. Nice.
Woo!
On fire. That's hot.
I saw these pants yesterday. I was like, oh, hell yeah, I got to get
perfect.
Those.
Perfect.
So when you're looking at the script and it said, you know, the sisters are burned or whatever it may be, because I think you're just a burnt,
right.
charred skeleton,
yeah.
basically, right?
Yeah.
So you don't even die on screen.
I didn't even get to do that,
you're
no.
just a dummy right there, right?
Yeah.
So did you watch that scene where your sister
I was
burned?
Actually off set, but I heard Carol screaming through the woods. And it was the craziest, most blood-curdling thing I think I've ever heard in my life. As she did. She gave it.
Now, for you, Kendall, I think Demi got throat...
Garroted, yep.
Yeah, is it Garrote or Garrett? Which one? Let's ask the audience. Is it Garrote or Garrote?
Look it up again.
Garrote.
I'm Canadian, so Garrote. So, yeah, so she kind of gets that. So tell us that procedure about how you died on screen. What was the special effects like?
That was actually fun in an odd sort of way. You know, because I'm standing there talking in the mirror and I don't see what Angela is doing behind me, looking for something to kill me with. And when she comes behind me, we sort of just we had to wrestle, you know. But I had my hand on the guitar string because it was a guitar string.
It was an actual guitar string. That could actually really cut your throat. Guerrilla filmmaking at its finest, ladies and gentlemen.
Low budget.
Yep.
So you got your hand in there to protect yourself from certain death.
Yes. And we tussled until she took me down. And then later I got to see the back end of me because they stuffed me in the window. And yeah, so you saw the back half of me hanging out of the window. And I did, because they called us back maybe 3 or 4 weeks later to be on a sound stage.
Do the scene
where all the dead bodies were. And that took a while. We all had to lay there and pretend to be dead. It was some hours of sitting there pretending to be dead and holding your breath, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah.
That was a trope for sure in the 80s horror, where the final girl would go into a room and find all of the dead bodies. That was something that all the killers in the 80s spent a lot of time to do that. I mean, I would think they would organize it and make like a presentation. You know what I mean?
It's all like, about the art.
It's all about the art. And my favorite thing about the reveal, when she's like, don't go in there, it's locked. He's like, no, it's not. And just opens the door like the worst lock ever. And this is Sean, of course, who walks inside. And then you see all of the bodies surrounded. Angela comes in and she basically ties up Sean and Renee. I don't remember if it was Renee's name, whatever her name was in the movie. And he ties them up, and then they show the dead bodies again for another time. Renee was Molly. And in this part of the scene, there's this random placement of a heavy metal band called Flotsam and Jetsam. Their album cover, the album cover for Doomsday for the Deceiver, is in this reveal of all the dead bodies. It's just a random Flotsam and Jetsam cover. So doing some research, I found out that Metal Blade Records, which was the record label that Metallica started on, had some kind of a licensing deal with the movie. And that's why the initial song is an Anvil song from Canada. The final song is by a band called Obsession. During the credits, I know way too much about this movie. You guys are starting on this.
That was amazing.
Office Rocker.
More than
teach
I
us,
do.
Jericho.
Teach us. And then the random Flotsam and Jetsam album cover, which I'm assuming is like, we need to get another plug for Metal Blade Records. Just put the album cover there during the reveal. So you actually see this. And as a 16-year-old kid watching this movie, like, oh my God, it's Flotsam and Jetsam. This is amazing. And now the true bit of trivia, you want to go deep, is on that record, that Flotsam and Jetsam record, is a bass player who played with Flotsam and Jetsam and then ended up going to another band and becoming their bass player and becoming one of the biggest metal bands in the world. You guys know who that was?
Metallica.
Jason Newsted of Metallica. Yes, he Woo! Came from Flotsam and Jetsam to Metallica. So on that album is Jason Newsted playing. So there you go.
Wow, that's some deep diving.
My day.
A little bit of trivia.
Just
there
my day.
I mean, crazy, right?
Wow.
My mind is blown.
Your mind is blown. And I actually asked the guys from Anvil, because once again, it's like, let meet the guys from Anvil. I got to ask about Sleepaway Camp, too. They had no idea. This is how it was back in the day. Like, what? Our song is on what movie? What are you talking about? So obviously the residuals have not been pouring in for Anvil.
They're not missing much.
Straight through the eyes is what it's called. So let's talk about the movie itself. So another reason why this movie works so well is because we mentioned Angela, Pamela Springsteen. She does such a great job of being like this crazy psycho who walks the line of being like this loving counselor. And how she gets away with the murders is she just tells the boss that she just sent people home. That's it. Like, I just sent them home. And everyone just goes,
okay.
Okay. Right on. So that happens throughout the movie, which I just love that it's so easy for her to be murdering these poor kids. And where's George? Oh, I sent him home. Okay.
Actually, that's what helps get me done in, because I start saying I called this one's mother and that one's
right.
mother and that one's mother. And
oh,
then,
yeah.
And
you nosy busybody, you.
Yeah, and they're saying that the kids are still here, but I'm saying that to Angela. And that's when she starts looking for something to get rid of me.
Doesn't she grab a couple things first?
She has a pencil first.
Right.
And then, I can't remember, was it a radio? I
think something like
boom,
that, yeah.
A boom box. And then
stick, and then it's like, oh, this guitar string.
Yep, she picks up her guitar that she plays, and she,
and uses that.
But again, that's that campy comic relief that was realistic, but to watch it was hilarious.
Yeah. Yep.
It's really interesting, too, because once again, I think the hanging out and watching a movie with Quentin Tarantino years ago, and I mentioned to him, because when she picks up all these weapons, that's what Bruce Willis does in Pulp Fiction. Remember, before he goes downstairs to take care of Zed, he's picking up all the the weapons, and of course I'm like, did you get that from Sleepaway Camp 2? And he's like, I remember that movie. I'm not sure. So that could
That's
be
a yes.
That could, I'm going to say yes. That Tarantino Also influenced by Sleepaway Camp 2, Unhappy Campers.
Tell him we're all available to work.
Yeah, exactly. He likes doing that, right? Putting the actors from the from back in the day in his movies. So when you guys were making this, like you mentioned, you were very quickly on and off the set. How long? A week?
Yeah, I think we were maybe a couple weeks, two or three. Yeah.
How about you, Kendall?
Not much more. I think maybe 4 weeks at the camp, and then they called us back for the final.
For the reshoot or whatever, maybe.
Yeah.
So when do you find out that the movie is out? Do you get any letter in the mail saying, I know the answer to this, saying that the movie is done and it's going to be out next Tuesday? Like, any type of warning or just walking through your local Yumbo video and seeing it there?
I remember reaching out to my agent at the time, seeing if he found out. I got some sort of, it's coming soon, so it wasn't random, and then it was out. So I had a window of when it might come out.
Do you have any idea?
I don't remember ever, like, it was like, okay, that's over, moving on about my life.
Right.
Next audition, you know. I probably saw it in the video store and went,
So what was did you guys have a viewing party at your house, or what did you, when did you first watch it?
By the time it was released, I had moved back to New York, because that's where I'm from originally. I think they sent, because I don't remember buying the movie, I think they sent it, and that's how I knew that it was finally out. And I had some friends over to watch it, and they didn't know whether they should laugh or they didn't know what to think.
I'm really wondering when you guys realized it had such a cult following.
I mean, really, we did a reunion convention with Days of the Dead the February before the COVID
everything
shut down.
Like, the
I mean,
month
it was
before.
A month before, yeah. And we were so well received. And the fans just came out of nowhere, and we're just like, "What? What? What is happening?"
No way! Not until then.
Yeah.
Oh my god!
I had no idea. I mean, I had the random person contact me on Facebook or whatever, but other than that,
wow. Well, I'm glad you're here now. We can show you how loved you are.
Not even. Like, thank you, everybody.
Yeah, thank you.
We love you guys so much, and so appreciative that you guys can appreciate us.
Yeah.
And we do.
And I actually thought it was a joke when I got the email from Mike. Looked at it and I thought somebody was pulling some sort of joke that they wanted us to come to this convention. And I didn't believe it for quite some time.
Then why didn't
we
you believe
honored,
it?
Man.
Because I had no idea. I didn't know that the movie was still being viewed. Just didn't know that it had taken legs after, because it was a while ago, right. You know, had no clue, none.
Who else was with you at the reunion?
Well, most everybody that's here tonight, I think, was there.
Yeah.
All Sleepaway Camps, not just two.
Right. A reunion situation.
Gotcha. So you didn't see like a Pamela Springsteen showing up or Renee or anything?
No, she didn't show up. None of the...
But Carol was there. Her other
sister
was there.
My sister was there. But Carol lives in Atlanta. Also, well, she lives in the mountains. She has a winery in North Georgia. So it's hard for her to get away. But it was fun. It was a lot of fun. Who else was there?
Not remember her name. She gets killed at the very, very, very beginning of the movie before, like, the
I love this. I love this.
Credit.
Let's talk about that death. And I think she's even listed as, I keep looking and referencing the cast.
Death?
Yeah, exactly. I think she's actually, doesn't even have a name. She's like killed at the beginning.
Yeah.
No way. First
camper. So she's the one that when she's like, I just want to go home, and she just wants to get out of there.
Yeah. And then who's got that shirt on? Where's that shirt?
Somebody's
got a shirt about that, I think.
Of that exact scene?
They might be in their cars. A lot of people are listening in their cars
anyway.
Back there.
Right. Okay. So anyways, you see that Angela, I think she hits her from behind with, like, you know, she uses a branch quite a bit. She likes wielding that tree branch. So she does that. Yeah. Trisha Grant as Girl Sent Home.
Right. Yes.
That's right.
Yes.
That's her name
Girl
in the
sent
credits.
Home.
Girl Sent Home. Girl Sent Home.
girl, sit home. Hell yeah.
So she gets hit from behind, and when she falls down, you see this, like, giant tongue thingy in between her mouth that Angela then proceeds to rip out, and it's just, like, the worst fake tongue from, like, a joke shop. Like, it's so bad, right? Like,
suspension.
You could have literally have gone to, you know, a butcher shop and bought, like, a tongue. Right. And use that instead. Aww. It was like this rubbery.
I suspend my disbelief. I liked it.
It wasn't her real tongue?
No. Why are you ruining this movie for me, man?
Spoiler alert. So check out this is a funny story that just actually happened today. So are you guys familiar with the character actor Michael Hitchcock? He's in all the Christopher Guest mockumentaries. If you saw him, he's a writer for Mad TV, and he's on a million different things. Like, he's one of those guys, when you see him, you know him. Super funny. He's a groundling. I'm a groundling, so we met during those days. I always asked him, because if you go to Wikipedia, you see Michael Hitchcock wrote Sleepaway Camp 2 and Sleepaway Camp 3. And he was like, no, it's another Michael Hitchcock. It's got to be another Michael Hitchcock. I asked him again today. He's like, no, it's not. And then finally he called me. He goes, dude, cat's out of the bag. I wrote Sleepaway Camp 2 and 3.
That's breaking news, y'all.
That's huge news.
That is groundbreaking.
Huge news. He wrote it under the pseudonym of Fritz Gordon. So when you see written by Fritz Gordon, it's actually Michael. And Michael is in the Happy Camper sing-along scene as a counselor. So he's going to do an interview with me. We're going to put it together with this interview about why it's taken him so long to admit it. And he'll only talk to me. I get the exclusive from Mike Hitchcock, a.k.a. Fritz Gordon, about writing these films.
Tell him it is the thing he should be most proud of in his entire career.
Yes. Forget about Best in Show.
No, nothing. Sleep
you guys
like
ever seen
too.
Best in Show? Remember the guy who's looking for Busy Bee? That's Michael Hitchcock. Where's Busy Bee? Where the fuck is Busy Bee? So, yeah, so we've got that exclusive information as well. But that also brings up another question, that Sleepaway Camp 3, which is not as good as Sleepaway Camp 2, but was being kind of filmed at the same time. What do you guys remember about this?
They filmed 2 and then immediately went to production of 3.
Of 3, because they had the facility.
We shut down, and they used the same camp, and, you know, Renee was still there, and I mean, mm-hmm. they rolled right into it. I think maybe it even overlapped a little bit.
Yeah, they were coming on, like, shooting maybe in the evening, and we were shooting in the day.
Oh, wow. So they were really making it together.
Yeah.
Because it seems like, though, that after you guys left, they probably ran out of money. Because, once again, Angela goes on a killing spree with a branch. You'll see it tonight. And that's what Michael said. Sorry, that's what Fritz Gordon said. He goes, I was so angry at them, I kept calling them, like, she's supposed to kill them this or that way. And it's like, she just kept using that branch. Because a branch is really cheap.
She's resourceful.
Well, it
was there, man.
She can wield that branch. Let's talk, as we start to wind down here, about the actual last 20 minutes of Sleepaway Camp 2. If you guys have seen it recently, or you're going to be watching it tonight.
Woo!
So it's going, and it's good. And then, you know, there's so many great kills, and, like, the poor kid gets killed wearing his Freddy makeup and gets his throat slashed with the Freddy fingers.
Oh, the irony.
The irony. I was wondering how they were able to get away with that, too. New Line Cinema must have not cared so far under the radar. Anyways, it's moving along great. And Brian Clark Duncan, he gets the acid thrown in the face, which is a great death, and they did a really good job with that. And then there's a flashback of Angela sleeping, and it's about 5 minutes of her killing everybody again. And then there's about a 10-minute chase through the woods, which is absolutely incredible. Of Renee escapes, Molly escapes from the killing ground, the burial ground where the Flotsam and Jetsam album is. She escapes and she runs away through the forest. And she's running, and she's running, and she runs right next to a tree where, of course, Angela's right beside her. And then she goes, ah, and then runs again. And she's running, and she's running, and she's running, and she runs past another tree where Angela's there again. Then Angela pushes her off a grassy knoll, shall we say? And
sure.
Yeah, and then just, like, looks at her and just leaves her for dead. And then she goes back to the camp. Everybody in the movie dies. Like, the kids die, the little kids, like, at the end. She's like, oh, I told you guys to stop being peeping Toms. Right. Their throats are slit.
True. Yep.
the last counselor who looks like Pat Benatar. She goes in and sees Uncle John's hand cut off because he fires Angela. And then the other kid is hanging from the corner. And then she's like, ah, and then she gets stabbed with a twisting of the knife. Everyone's dead. And then Renee Estevez wakes up and is now running in the dark. It's like this 20 minutes of just running and running and running. Then, of course, she runs into the truck where the driver is Angela, who's killed the cowboy lady. Ain't no skin off my tits, sugar. And then it just ends. Do you remember this?
Yep.
This is an amazing reenactment, by the way. Thank you for recreating those.
Thank you, guys. I mean,
I feel like I'm watching it right now.
It's a theater of the mind. So you can see, and she just, it shows her face, and then it goes, psh, 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 strong, end of movie.
Yeah.
So what do we think happened to Molly? Did she die? Do you think that, I mean, what do you guys think? Did Molly die? Did she escape? Where are we at here with this? She escaped.
Okay. She died, man. Died. It's like a glass half full, half empty. Do you want her to die or not? That bitch died.
Oh my God.
Team Angela.
Team Angela. You know, and it's funny too because then you see the kid, Sean, he gets his head cut off. And then in three, his dad, who's a cop, and he finds out that Angela killed his son, and then she just shoots him too. The end of that.
But you gotta love that they brought it all together. Like they were trying.
They did.
To but make it was a cinematic universe.
Yeah, it wasn't
continuity.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But wasn't continuity. Wasn't very valiant way for the cop to die. Just like you killed my son. Bam, bam.
Life ain't always valiant, Chris. Sometimes shit happens.
So, last few questions here for you guys. How did Sleepaway Camp 2 affect your life then, if at all? And how is it affecting it now? What do you think, Kendall?
Honestly, I went back to New York, so it was something on my resume because I sort of morphed over into doing more like soap opera stuff. Yeah, and then I just decided I needed to put that acting portion on hold, and then I didn't think about it anymore until I got that email that I thought was a joke.
Aww. Right.
Well, we got to get you back in stuff and more horror cons. You guys are like literal icon stuff. We're glad you're here.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's really nice.
So how about now that you see people that are coming to see you and getting your autograph and all that sort of thing? Is it kind of a bonus round for you, like a victory lap sort
of
thing?
It is. It is, definitely. And I want to thank you all.
Yay.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
It is appreciated more than you can understand. But, it's great. It kind of makes me think about the business and the industry again, you know.
Yeah.
Interesting, too, because there's, you know, how many actors is there? You know, let's say, I don't know, 10,000, just for probably the lowest number I could pick. But the fact that you're in something that is really impacting people's lives is probably the goal of every actor. Now, whether you can do that 15 times or once, you still are a part of something special.
That's very, 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 very true.
Yeah.
Definitely. And like I said, much appreciated.
How about you, Amy?
Well, you know, like I said, at the time I was a teen actor and just moved on to the next thing, which ended up being dating musicians and moving to LA and
had nothing to do with
acting. But I have a funny story, and I think it affected my sister more than it did me, because when she went to college, her college roommate said, I want to watch my favorite movie. And my sister said, what movie is that? And she said, Sleepaway Camp 2.
Oh, wow.
And my sister was like, oh.
She should be proud.
Yeah. Well, and the girl, and she said, well, my sister was in that movie. And the girl was like, no way. And then she said, I thought your laugh sounded familiar. So it's been a very interesting ride. And I'm super, super humbled and proud to be a part of this. It's a whole lot of fun to do these events and see all of you guys that appreciate us again. I know I said that already, but you can't say it enough, right?
That's exactly right.
So thank you all for coming.
Yeah, you guys rock.
Last question. Is there a favorite scene that you have in the movie involving you or somebody else? When you watch it back, is there something that stands out for you?
Just in Sleepaway Camp 2?
or whatever in the Sleepaway Camp franchise.
I think the thing that sticks out the most for me is the kill with the curling iron in the first one.
Yes.
I think that's just my, wow. Okay.
See, I feel like they could have gone farther with it, though.
Who thought of that?
Like, I liked it, but I wanted more, you know?
But that was also 1983, so that was pretty vicious for the time.
Wow. Well, let's remake it. Yeah. We need viciousness.
What do you think, Kendall? Is there one that stands up for you? A scene, a moment?
Actually, it was the reverse panty raid when we went into the boys' camp room. And that it was fun. That particular scene was...
That was a good one.
...loosely scripted, and it was a lot of fun. Yeah, and the other thing that sticks out in mind, were you there for the pool scene?
No, we were dead.
You were dead.
We were dead.
Oh.
Is that Allie's wet t-shirt scene?
We were having a barbecue. That was Allie's wet t-shirt scene.
Another standout scene.
But the pool hadn't been maintained, so it was green.
Oh, no.
Algae.
Aw, Allie's a trooper.
And yeah, she was, because I wouldn't get in the pool. If you look way in the back, you'll see somebody in a yellow bathing suit, and that was me sitting on the side watching everybody have fun. So those were the two things that stuck.
How about you, Darcy?
I mean, you can't beat leeches.
Yeah, the leeches in the
outhouse. That's number one in the whole series, for sure.
Yeah, that to me stands out. I also just love Sean's beheading, because it's really well done. And I think that's another thing about the Sleepaway Camp 2 movie, is that there's some really great kills, and there's some ones that just they just got it over with. I think they spent some time on this one, because he's literally lying like this, and he's like, you know, my dad's going to get you. And she goes, oh, really? And just grabs this thing and cuts his head off like in 2 seconds. You're like, what? And it actually looks really good. There's no remorse. There's no hesitation from Angela, the angel of death, Baker slash...
Damn, you're selling this.
Slash Johnson. My name is Angela Johnson, not Angela Baker, because she took all the pills and the electroshock and one surgery even, she says. So I just really love that just out of nowhere kill. Last thing, guys, and we're probably going to do this later, but I think we should do it now as well, just in honor of the whole movie.
Don't make us sing.
Oh, we're going to sing.
No. Oh, Lord.
No.
Do you guys remember the Happy Camper song?
No. I don't remember.
You guys can just kind of hum along if you want. You don't remember the words?
No.
Because I happen to have them right here.
Oh, you cheater.
Cheater.
Yeah,
of course you do.
Of course. So it's very easy.
I don't have my phone.
It's very easy. I'm a happy camper.
It's practice for tonight.
I love the summer sun. I love the trees and forest. I'm always having fun. Oh, I'm a happy camper. I love the clear blue sky.
I'm going to make you eat oatmeal.
And with the grace of God, I'll camp until I die. You guys remember this? You want to give it a try?
I want to hear
that. I said you want to give it a try.
Yeah. Are you happy campers?
Here we go. There's our cue card right there. Oh, I'm a happy camper. I love the summer sun. I love the trees and forest. I'm always having fun. I'm a happy camper. I love the clear blue sky.
Woo!
And with the grace of God, I'll camp until I die. Kendall and Amy, Sleepaway Camp 2 and Happy Campers! Thank you, guys!
Thank you, everybody!
Thank you all!
It's been a long time since I saw my friend Michael Hitchcock, one of the funniest people I've met. reading during the podcast, how rude.
Oh, are we starting? I've just been...
Was I talking about you in that?
Well, yeah, you were, but that's not why I'm reading it. It's just such a great book.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Chris Jericho, Undisputed.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with A Lion's Tale either.
We did Groundlings together quite a few times, gosh, 15 years ago. Had a great time. Kept in touch ever since. And there's always a question that I had for Mike, because I read it online. Of course, if you read it online, it must be true. And I just asked them again the other day, because I just did the last drive in Jamboree, and I was doing a podcast about Sleepaway Camp 2, which is one of my all-time favorite movies. And I just happened to see again that it said that Michael Hitchcock wrote these movies. And I asked you again if you had wrote them. You're like, absolutely not. This is pure rubbish. This is hogwash. And then you text me about 20 minutes later and had a confession to make for the first time ever since 1988 about Sleepaway Camp 2.
And three.
Well, let's set this record straight immediately. You've only asked me twice. One time when you asked, I said, don't believe everything you hear. So I didn't say no.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last time you said, it's on your Wikipedia or something like that. And I think I said on that one, I said, well, I didn't write that on Wikipedia. So I didn't say I didn't. Anyway, yes, I am Fritz Gordon, who wrote Sleepaway Camp 2 and 3.
This is huge. This is the first time you've ever actually admitted it publicly.
That's absolutely true. It's the very first time. However, I told you, we were talking briefly beforehand on the box set that got released. I can't remember when. That was the special box set with the Red Cross on it. And they had to redo it because I think the Red Cross was going to sue. There was DVD extras, and Fritz Gordon and Michael A. Simpson, the director, did talk on that. But I did it as Fritz Gordon with an English accent that lasted maybe 6 minutes. And then I think it turned into a Southern accent. And then I think I just dropped it.
Well, as you know, that's one of the main rules of Groundlings is you never use accents because you can never keep it all the way through.
Well, I'm terrible at accents anyway. I'm very bad at it. I don't know why I thought English would be fairly easy to do. Well, it wasn't for me. Very bad choice. But anyway, if anyone comes across the DVD extras from that particular era, because I know there's been some since then, it does exist. There is commentary from, it's probably pretty good from Michael A. Simpson, because he knows more about, obviously, the production than I do. Although, as I told you, I was there for about a week. And I do appear when they're singing Happy Camper Song. I am in the audience. So if you look for a guy with a mullet, I'm there. Sitting next to a lady who's my aunt, who's still alive. She's in her 90s now.
So let me ask this. Why is it something that you kind of wanted to keep under wraps? Because your career is amazing. You've had so many great films and movies and television credits and writing credits. I mean, you've pretty much done it all. We could do a whole podcast, and we will, just about that. But why were you hiding the fact that you wrote this extremely quirky, fun movie?
Well, I think at the very beginning, it was sort of like I didn't want to be known. I think at the time I was branching out into just writing, and you get typed in the industry very quickly. Mm. I didn't want to be typed as a horror film writer. And I thought, well, if that's what I'm known for, then that's what I'm going to be doing for the rest of my life. And weirdly, it took many years to kind of figure out that what I was probably the best at was comedy. But because the thing right after the Sleepaway Camp movies, I wrote a drama that got pretty good acclaim called Where the Day Takes You, which was Will Smith's first movie. And it was start a whole bunch of people of that era, Sean Astin and Dermot Mulroney, and just on and on and on. So I think at that time I kind of wanted to keep hidden the horror part of my beginnings. Mm-hmm. And then as time went on, I thought, well, you know, Fritz Gordon is a fun person who maybe or maybe not lives in London. And, you know, every once in a while I'll check on what people say about it and then move on. Because as you well know, you know, I was looking up in 1987 when this movie was written. It was written in 87 and released in 88. It filmed in 87, too, I think. There were 96 horror films in 1987, if you look on Wikipedia.
Hmm.
So there was a glut of them. And I didn't want to be just one more of those people, I think. I think that was sort of my reasoning back then.
Where did you get the name Fritz Gordon from?
Well, Gordon is my middle name.
Okay.
And Fritz came because in high school I took German class, and we all got to give ourselves a German name that we were called by in class, and mine was Fritz. So that's where Fritz Gordon came from.
And how did you get the gig originally writing these movies?
Well, that's also not, yeah, on Wikipedia it says that I was a staff member of Double Helix, which was the production company that did them. That's not accurate. I worked for a company originally called Embassy Home Entertainment, which was a home entertainment company. It was at the time when I first started there, was owned by Norman Lear of All in the Family and Maude and that fame. And my job in the home entertainment company was to be the in-house writer. And as time went on, we found out that most things were never going to get written for video cassettes. They were going to be straight movies that people wanted to watch. So I also did acquisitions and I also did marketing. But this project came about, Michael A. Simpson, the director, I had met at early Sundance. He had done an indie movie that I liked. Our company did not end up buying it, but I liked the movie and we had kept in touch. And he and I think the producers of Double Helix came to our company and said, would you do a sequel to Sleepaway Camp? And they had the rights to it. And they reiterated that it was, you know, it had made like a pretty good amount of money back in the day, back in 1983, I think it was released. Mm-hmm. The company read the script and passed on that script. And I think partly why was, just like I just mentioned, there was a glut of product. I still thought, I knew Michael, I knew he would do a good job with whatever he got. But I thought, why don't we take a different approach to it? Why don't we try a little more tongue-in-cheek just to break out of the mold, just to do something a little bit different? And I volunteered to write Sleepaway Camp 2 for free, which I did. And they liked it. And that's how it got started. And then I did get paid a nominal fee, you know, later. And then I'm not sure why they did 2 and 3. That's where my memory is a little fuzzy, because after all, this is 36 years later.
Right.
And Michael A. Simpson, if you ever talk to him, might know the answer to that. But I imagine what happened is that whatever budget the company said you can make this for, they said, well, how about you give us a little bit more money and we'll make 2 of them? Because it would probably, for whatever reason, economically work out for them that it wasn't enough to make 1. But if you give us a little bit more, maybe we could do 2. So then I wrote the other one. And I wrote it very quickly, and they filmed them back to back, I think at the end of September in 87 through, there's differing accounts of who says what, but either mid-October or the end of October, 87 was when they were made. And they were made in, which you, I'm sure you know by now, an abandoned YMCA camp outside of Atlanta called Camp Waco. It was also called Camp Younce, depending on whatever. So, and they were made there because the original Sleepaway Camp was set in New York. And I was very concerned that if we're shooting in Georgia, it's going to sound like Georgia with the actors. At least in number 2, it's not too apparent. You can, there's a couple of actors who definitely have a Georgia accent, but most of them really stepped up to the plate and did not do that. So Georgia substituted for New York, and it was shot in the middle of nowhere. You can see it, by the way, Chris, I don't know if you've seen it, but on YouTube, a couple people went to that place and, you know, walked around. It's now, I think, like a hunting.
Oh, wow.
So some of those buildings still are up, or were up when they filmed it. And they walk around and say, well, there's the pool, or there's where that was. And it's kind of crazy.
Well, it's interesting to me, too, because obviously 2 is so good. And the reason why I don't care for 3 is because it's not as good, and is it because of the budget constraints or whatever? Kind of tell us a little bit where Sleepaway Camp 3 goes wrong, because everything about 2 is so right. And that's why I think it was a little bit disappointing with 3. I'm wondering if it didn't fit your vision. Was there a lot of stuff that was changed with that script?
It's so funny because I haven't thought about this for a long time, and I literally have kept drafts saved in boxes, and I pulled them out. Yeah, they definitely, what the original, on both of them, there were things that got changed for budgetary reasons. On 3 especially, at one point, at least in the first draft, there was a stray dog at camp that did not like Angela at all. And at the very end, it was the dog that attacked Angela and brought her down and really mauled her and, you know, it was a dog that brought her down. And obviously you can't shoot a dog on limited right. budget. So I don't know what I was even thinking. So that got thrown out fairly quickly. But I think they probably spent a good deal of the money
right.
on the first one and didn't have as much left over on the second one. And, you know, when in doubt, bring out that branch and hit people with it.
Yeah, she used that branch for most of her kills.
She uses it a lot in number 3. That branch comes out. Because I actually looked about that too to see what changed in those regards. Like, when Herman got killed, that was supposed to be, the branch was supposed to be on fire, and it was supposed to first hit him in the crotch and then whack him in the head and catch him on fire. So that was all supposed to be a huge fire thing.
Oh.
Tawny, the newscaster, originally Angela cut the brakes to her news van and it went over a cliff. I mean, so there were bigger, more special effects. And then the ones that they did have, like the girl that goes down the flagpole and the lawnmower thing, which were, you know, I'd say objectively pretty good, scary moments, got way cut back because of the rating. These films were both, I think by contract, had to be with our company, had to be rated. Part of the contract was they had to be rated. They had to be rated R.
Right.
So there are movies of that era that did not have ratings at all because they were going straight to video. So that company, whoever rates the movies, had huge notes. And both of those stunts got way cut back. So I think some of that, which was there, didn't end up on film. You didn't see it. So that's part of it. And then, yeah, and it got silly. It's sillier. It definitely is. That's my fault, I guess. And we can talk more about that at some point. But I do like the premise of two grifters who take over a camp and are screwing the government out of money to get rich.
Yeah.
So I think Angela had every right to get rid of them.
I like the fact that Herman was Michael J. Pollard, who had an Academy Award nomination in his credits. And then Sleepaway Camp.
Well, that was another thing, because I was there when he was there. And I remember at the time thinking, oh my gosh, we've got, you know, he's in one of my favorite films of all time, Bonnie and Clyde.
Bonnie and Clyde, right. Yeah.
And like, I think he was in Dick Tracy. I mean, he's in amazing movies. And at that point, he had a handler, someone with him all the time to kind of help him. And I just remember at the time thinking, oh, Michael J. Pollard, I wish you weren't in this movie because you deserve so much better than this. And nothing to be said about anyone else. I'm just thought, I, you know, I'm glad he's in it, but I'm not glad he's in it.
Yeah.
You know, that kind
he's
of
he's got to work, but, yeah, you know, I see.
Yeah, but he's so iconic. And he was also, you know, he was just at a point in his life where he was having a bit of a difficult time, I think. But a nice guy. So there you have it.
Let's talk about some of the great moments on Two. One of my all-time favorite kills in horror movie history is the outhouse kill of Allie, where once again, Angela breaks out that branch and shoves her down the outhouse.
She does. I looked that one up too, because, and I think it's cinematically, it's pretty funny. It is probably my favorite of those, just because it's so stupid. And that kind of came about because my grandmother lived on a farm and she had an outhouse. And as a kid, we were scared to death of it for, you know, like, I mean, it was closed. You couldn't get in it. But I was so like, what if we fell in there when we drowned and all of that? And so that stuck in my memory my whole life. I thought, well, let's try an outhouse kill. And originally, because I know everybody talks about, well, how did she get down there and blah, 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 blah. The way it was originally scripted, she had been injured, like Angela had stabbed her. And then at one point, Angela had takes an axe. The outhouse itself had fallen apart in the script. So it was only partly there. And it was on a platform. And Angela takes an axe, splits the platform, which, you know, had been decaying, and the whole thing caves in. That's how she fell in originally. And that would have been extremely hard to shoot.
To shoot, right.
On a budget. So I see why they did it the way they did.
I like the fact that her face is also covered in leeches.
Me too.
We looked it up to see if it's possible. And apparently leeches can live in sewage.
Well, I used to go to camp. I went to camp my whole life, and they were always like, look out for leeches. There's leeches everywhere. When you get out of the water, you better get the leeches off. So I thought, you know, what's worse than like drowning in shit? It's like drowning in shit and having leeches on you, like as a one final humiliation. So
about speaking of shit, the illustrious Shit Sisters, who Amy Fields was on the podcast the other day. I just love the concept of the Shoat Sisters, who are now known as the Shit Sisters.
Yeah.
What was the inspiration behind them?
I think maybe it was just the time. It was just the stoner kids who, like, you know, Angela's certainly not going to like that. And I looked that up too, because originally there was a scene that was cut, and I see why. But originally Angela went into town and bought the liquor and put it out for them to discover, like it's Christmas in July. And so it was sort of Angela's kind of baited them to do it. And that got cut fairly early. Yeah, in the very, very first two drafts, I think it was Angela who went and got the liquor. And then, and maybe even did a drug deal so that there would be joints. She kind of set them up in the original draft. I like it better the way it is now, where they're just, it's all their fault, basically.
Yeah.
But there's always those kids at camp and school that just don't give a fuck. And that's sort of what I liked about them. And they were very funny, by the way. I thought they did a good job.
Were you involved? I mean, obviously, usually that's not the case that the scriptwriter's involved in any of the casting, but did you have anything to do with that? Because there was some fairly decent names in this.
Yes,
right?
a little bit. I think they did a Los Angeles casting call, and I was there for that. The two people I remember were Brian Patrick Clark, who played TC, came in and read and was very good. And then Uncle John, who was Walter...
Gotell?
Yes, Gotell, came in. And he was, you know, he was a huge deal. He is like General Gogol in all of the James Bond movies.
Yeah.
And has this massive career. And I remember him coming in and going, I will not read, but you can interview me. And then he did read. Even though he said he wouldn't, he did. And of course, you're going to give it to, you know, why wouldn't you give it to anybody who's been in all those James Bond movies? So, and I remember Brian Patrick Clarke came in and just like owned it. He was just sort of that guy. And he has had, especially then, he was in every soap opera you can imagine.
Eight is Enough, even big sitcoms.
Eight is Enough. Yeah. But he was in General Hospital and all of them, like Bold and the Beautiful, all of them. He's still a working actor and a great guy. And at that time, I remember when we were in Georgia, we went to McDonald's or something, and he got recognized all over the place because everybody watches soaps.
Sure, he's a recognizable guy. As soon as you see him, yeah. You know, like, oh, I know that guy.
But Pam Springsteen, I don't know how she got involved. Michael A. Simpson would know that. I do think at the very beginning, they did try to get Felissa Rose. I know that she was certainly mentioned.
She said she was too young.
She was too young to play. Yes, said, yeah. Angela was supposed to be 21. Yeah.
Yeah. She was only like 16 or something like that at the time.
Yeah. And that would be expensive to bring somebody down to Atlanta and all of that. I don't know where they got Pam. I'm not sure where Pam came from or Renee Estevez. I don't know. I don't know when they got involved, but they were both, I think, a great coup, both of them.
I mean, did you know that she was Bruce Springsteen's sister?
That was told to me the second that it was mentioned. When I met her, I never brought it up. Never, never, never. It was just something I don't think everyone knew and no one would talk about it. So I don't know if she ever talked about it, but it was so like, oh my God, it's her. You know, you want to ask her a million questions.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I don't think I asked her anything ever, as if, you know, like the elephant in the room and you just don't talk about it. And I don't even remember if I talked to Renee about her brothers, like, you know, Emilio and Charlie Sheen and Martin Sheen and all that. I don't remember. But thank God for both of them. I thought they elevated it.
Yeah, they're great.
They're really good. And especially, well, both of them. But Pamela, where she obviously has to deliver funny lines here and there. And she did it well. I thought she was pretty darn grounded when she had to be. And could pop off a little quip when she needed to pop one off and not look like an idiot.
I do love the ending of the movie where about the 60-minute mark or so, there's a big flashback of Angela and all her killing. And then there's a big, long chase scene through the woods that to me just screams, we need to make this movie a little longer. Just run a little bit longer. Get a couple more minutes of running in there.
Well, you know, that's probably true. I saw a podcast that you did with the horror guy who loves everything, you know, he's
Dead Meat James. Yeah.
Yes. He's amazing. And you talked about both of those things. And what I do remember about the flashback is, and I vaguely remember this, if you hadn't brought it up, I don't think I would remember. It's not in the scripts. It absolutely was an add-on, but clearly we didn't go back 5 months later and do reshoots. So that was done on set when they were filming. And I don't know if they did a pickup during three when they were already done with two, or so someone like, you know, the script supervisor is usually, besides making sure everybody's saying the right line, they're also timing the scenes. So at some point they must have timed it and gone, this is timing out too short.
Yeah.
They probably huddled together and said, we're going to need to do something. What should we do? And all I remember adding to the conversation, because I think by that time they had decided they were going to do some sort of nightmare situation. And I said, Angela would not be scared about the killings. She would be scared. Her nightmare would be that somebody thinks she's fucked up. That was my addition to it. And they do end it with that. They do end it with Allie going, you're more fucked up than I thought. And then she wakes up.
Right. How about the ending scene of when Molly's running through the forest and she finally comes onto the road and there's Angela with the lady's cowboy hat and says, no skin off my tits, sister. What happens in your writer's head? Did she die? Did she run about? What did you think?
I mean, we all hope she didn't.
Right.
But Angela's pretty crafty, I have to say. Yeah. I don't think Angela had a choice in the matter. She wants to continue. I think if Molly lived, Angela would have ended up in jail. So clearly she didn't, because she came back to camp the next year. So I think poor Molly didn't end up alive in that one. I looked up some of that too. Like originally there were police that came to the camp and barged in, and Molly's death was a lot more, it was just something that too expensive to shoot. But then she fell down, you know, a big hill and clammed onto a branch and the branch broke, and then she got stabbed through the chest on something else on the floor, so on the, and that couldn't be done because of budget. And then most of the murders stayed as scripted. The only other one that was sort of not as written completely was when TC comes in and she throws the cup of acid on him. That was originally a bucket of acid above the door, like the kids had done, like Charlie and Emilio had done with the water.
Right.
And so it was a mirror of that, except this time it's acid. And I remember when I saw it, I thought, like, really, a cup of acid's going to kill somebody? I don't think so. But, you know, what are you going to do? That's how it goes.
Yeah. It's a good one, though. It's believable because he gets in his face.
And then she does say, you want another cup. So he probably got a few cups when we weren't watching.
Probably completely out of your knowledge, but this, I've always wondered this, and I actually kind of know, but when there's the second reveal after Molly and Sean are taken hostage in the shed where all the bodies are there and Allie's green leech covered mm-hmm. face is still on there, they pan across and there's a record, an LP by a band called Flotsam and Jetsam,
yeah.
which is famous because the bass player from Metallica came from that band. And there's no reason for it. Do you know why that album cover was in there?
I have absolutely no idea, except for maybe the Schott Sisters. That would be the only reason why. And originally, because I looked that up, in the original script, Angela had set up that room like a couple of them were playing checkers.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Someone else. So there was a little bit of that, like as if they were like playthings or something. But yeah, I have no idea why that was there. It was probably at some point like, well, they didn't have a body there and they needed something. You know what I mean? Well, they do the pan. So, well, we'll put a record album there. And well, what do we have? We have maybe the Schott Sisters listen to heavy metal or one of the guys. So that's what it was. But yeah, I don't know why.
I think the studio had some kind of a deal with the record company because there's a couple other songs in the movie that are from this Metal Blade Records. So I'm thinking maybe
they might have
product
yeah.
placement, like just stick the album in there, make them happy. You know, they paid us $5,000 for the movie or whoever.
Yeah, on those I know like Anvil, you know, did the opening song and stuff. So maybe I don't know when that deal happened, if it happened before the movie was shot or after.
Yeah.
Your theory would be that they knew ahead of time. So maybe they did. I don't know.
Or maybe it was just random. I don't know. Maybe somebody thought it was.
It could be random, funny. But I don't know how you would get the right. You know, you can't. Well, I mean, I don't know if you watch Troll 2, there's a million.
Of course.
Product placement everywhere that there shouldn't be. And they could get sued. I don't know how they didn't get sued, but they're pretty careful in this movie, they really don't show products that much. So I bet you they must have had the rights.
Did you write the Happy Camper song?
I did write the Happy Camper song. And weirdly, that's what was also kind of funny about pretending that I wasn't Fritz Gordon. There's an Easter egg at the end of the movie. I, Michael Hitchcock, am credited in the credits as writing that song. And that was my little like, all right, if people really want to figure this out, well, there it is. It's right there.
Yeah.
And then the melody is by somebody else. However, the ending of it was, it got changed on set. And I think it was by Pamela or the guy that wrote the melody. It didn't end with, and I'll camp until I die. It ended with, and have a happy day. And so a camp until I die is so much better. So whoever thought of that did a much better job. I remember going on set and they told me that. Yeah, the original thing was, the last verse was, oh, I'm a happy camper. I love to sing and play. And I would like to say to you, have a happy day. And so, yeah. Camp Until I Die.
It's much better.
And it might have been Pam. I don't know. It was somebody. It wasn't me.
Last few things, Mike. When you went to the set for about a week, was there any stories that happened being on set, or was it just typical movie making?
Being a writer on set is always weird because you're always sitting there going, they're not saying it the way
they're saying it. Every word is gold. Like,
what happened? Yeah. What happened to the bucket over the thing? You know, all of that kind of
right.
All the things that writers do when you're on set. I just remembered that I didn't want them to know that I was Fritz Gordon either. So like, that was a secret even then. And I do remember going up to some of the actors and going, so, well, how come you decided to do the movie? And every one of them said, for the money. Not one of them said before the script. And I was sort of a little bit like, oh, well, that wasn't the answer I wanted to hear. But I have a couple things I want to show you guys since we've got them here. So here's the original VHS.
Yeah, the VHS
most
box,
people have, right?
Right, yeah.
And this always pissed me off.
Having the
that they got a model, and not Pamela.
Oh, right, good point. And there's of course the backpack filled with the Freddy mask and the Jason, you know, the
right.
Freddy fingers. Yeah,
yes, which she didn't bring. I mean, they, but anyway, it's not a bad cover except for like maybe get the real person,
right?
Or you know, and then here's the DVD which came out later, obviously, because back then and
so many covers for this movie, so many different
so
posters
many covers.
And covers. Yeah,
I kind of like this one. No, it's kind of good.
A good one, yeah.
I do have the box set, the one that we were talking about. That
the Red Cross, yeah.
Yeah, that it's unopened, and they're worth a lot of money. This is kind of weird, but this is what you would get. These are the sell sheets.
Oh, wow.
You would get for the store. So the stores would get something like this. And so it was like Camp Rolling Hills, you know, breakfast, blah, blah, blah. And then you open it up.
Oh, that's kind of the promotional material there.
Yeah. So it's all the promotion tells about the movie there, the promotion there. Whoops. Can you see it a little bit?
That's really cool. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the back a little bit more about who's in it and all of that.
So you're obviously proud of this movie that you have all of this memorabilia and all this stuff. It just seems like a great weight was be lifted off your shoulders for letting this cat out of the bag.
Yeah. It's always sort of been out, but it's, you know, the funny thing about all this stuff is there's, throughout your career, there's always a million people that are very nice. And then there's five that shit on it.
Right, right, right.
And the ones that shit on it are usually the ones that like, I've been interviewed before for other things I've done. And you think you're having a great interview. Then later you find out, well, they hated all of it. And like, why did you interview me? Like, why were you nice?
Right, exactly.
So that's why when I thought, well, let's do it with Chris, because I know Chris. I like Chris.
Well, I have a great respect for these movies. Right, exactly. You know?
And it was a good experience. And the other thing that happened at the camp, which you asked about, is in town, they thought that they were making a porn because I think they'd heard about nudity. So they thought that there was a porno being made. So I did remember that. They were like, there's a porno being made. No, it's not a porno. It's just a stupid horror film. That was a little rumor that was going around.
Let me ask you this last question for you. What is your favorite scene from 2 and your favorite scene from 3?
Ooh. Favorite scene from 2 is probably the outhouse scene.
So great.
Probably as far as the murders go. Looking back on, there's a scene that makes me laugh. Kendall Bean, she played Demi when she goes back and she's like, you know, I called and they weren't home and they didn't know where they were. And she keeps talking about that she just called everybody.
Yeah.
And that Angela then is going to, you know, get her. But I reread the scene and originally that monologue was like 2 pages where she called everybody.
Oh, wow.
And they cut it down the way they should have. But it just made me laugh. I thought, oh, this girl's really smart. She's just not going to give up because she's it kind of made me laugh when I read it again. So. And then Angela had no choice but to get rid of her. I'm trying to think what else got changed. Oh, here's something. So Charlie and Emilio, the little kids that took the pictures, originally they weren't Polaroids. They were going to be like, they actually did it like in a photography class and they had negatives and all that stuff. But there was a scene where they sold the pictures. They would sell them to the other campers. And I'm really kind of glad we got rid of that. So that went away fairly quickly. I thought, Jesus, boy, that's dark. They're selling all those kids like nude pictures all over camp. So yeah, they were really rotten.
I do like the end of 3 with Angela and just taking care of business and that cliffhanger. I thought that worked well.
Yeah, that was pretty good. My favorite part about 3 was that it was rich kids versus poor kids and that they're, you know, supposedly coming together for some grand experiment. But the real reason is just to make money off of the rich kids.
Right.
And in that one, I mean, everyone knows by now that in Sleepaway 2, everyone's named after the Brat Pack. I mean, everybody, every single name.
That's right. Yeah, for sure. Mayor,
every single one,
Allie,
including all of them,
Molly,
including like Uncle John is John Hughes, who's sort of like the leader of, you know, he was.
Dude, that's great. I don't think I've ever actually put 2 and 2 together on that before.
No, they're all, every one of them's a Brat Pack. TC is Tom Cruise, Rob Lowe, Ally Sheedy, Molly Ringwald, Emilio and Charlie, every one of them. And then in 3, Herman and Lily are Herman and Lily Munster, of course, because they're like the monsters who like are ripping off everybody. The rich kids are all the Brady Bunch. It's all Cindy, Bobby, Peter, Jan. They're all of them are the Brady Bunch. And the rotten kids are, well, they're not rotten. The poor kids are West Side Story names. So it's all like Arab and Maria and Tony. So that's where that came from. And then Tawny, who was the broadcaster at the beginning, was a nod to Tawny Little, who was a broadcaster out in L.A. A thing. And the only thing that got changed on that was there was a character called Action, and they were very, very concerned, the filmmakers, that if they said Action, everyone would think Action, like to begin.
Right.
So I think Action got changed to Arab at some point.
Like I said, man, the cat is out of the bag, and I think you should be pretty proud of being a big part of one of the greatest franchises in horror movie history, man.
Well, thank you, and my apologies to the original cast and to the original writer, because this is not that film, and I know that they are still continuing to do their version, and they should. So the way what we talk about is whatever. If they were the Rolling Stones, we were Twisted Sister. It's a different...
Different vibe.
Form of the same story.
Yeah. But I love two of the best of the series, so I think you nailed it with that one.
Well, I think one has one of the scariest, you know, reveals of all time.
Sure.
Not scary, but shocking.
Shocking,
yeah. Really, truly shocking and very original.
That's another thing I love, Angela, where she explains that she took her pills and she had shock therapy and she had, you know, one surgery, so she's better now.
In my book, she's, you know, I know she's a killer. She is a bit of a hero. She really, truly, she has a mission, which is to have good people in the world. And she wants it to be a positive experience. She just has a way of getting rid of the ones that aren't making it that way.
Which is all of them.
All of them. Well, unfortunately, yeah. Molly probably would have made it.
Well, good stuff, dude. It was great. I'm glad you did this. And it was got some great information here.
Great.
And I'll have to have you back on. We have to do one about your appearances in the Christopher Guest mockumentaries. That's a whole other story.
Yeah.
That'll be next.
Maybe we can do that on one of your cruises.
Ooh, maybe we could.
Ooh, wouldn't that be fun?
Ooh, that's
it. I bet wrestling fans would love to hear about.
They would. They would be there.
Would they?
I know exactly where we would have it.
Oh, and I know, by the way, and I'm going to leave you with this. I know what a big fan you are of Spinal Tap because of Fozzie and all of that. I found this when I was looking for stuff. This is an original lobby card
that's
of
great.
Spinal Tap. Isn't that cool?
It's awesome.
And then with all the credits on the back.
Oh, that's killer.
Because we released that movie back in the day, too.
That's right, yeah.
All right,
Mike.
Good to see you, Chris.
Good to see you, dude. Thank you so much, man. Appreciate it.
Okay.
Thanks. Right. I'm a happy camper now.
Me too.